Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, the 23rd of September, 2020. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. Petersburg emergency officials are still working on a plan that offers recommendations for responding to the COVID-19 pandemic, depending on numbers of cases in the community and other factors. The borough's incident commander, Carl Hagerman, told the assembly Monday the community risk mitigation plan is being drafted based on one produced in Ketchikan.
What the plan does is uses various indicators of community risk to assign an overall risk level to the community. It's being written as in the style of a health alert, basically just offering recommendations to the community to how to respond if the case count goes up or the hospital fills up with patients, maybe not even of COVID-related illnesses. It's not being written as a mandate.
Hagerman hopes to release a draft in the next 3 to 4 weeks. He also wants to create an online dashboard similar to the one used in Ketchikan. It shows testing and case numbers, risk levels, and recommended measures for limiting COVID spread. It also details compliance with state travel mandates for testing or quarantine. Hagerman also reported the borough's Emergency Operations Center team continues to meet once a week. Petersburg Medical Center staff continue screening and testing of incoming travelers at the airport. The borough's contract with the state for that airport testing runs through the end of October. There's also a new testing tent being installed this month outside of the terminal for the fall months. It's been 4 months since Alaska communities started receiving money from the state's share of federal COVID-19 relief. Even though the process is simple, more than one in four communities have not claimed that money yet. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman explains why.
Reginald Atkinson is the mayor of Metlakatla, where local leaders are trying to figure out how to spend more than $500,000. That's the amount the state government set aside for Metlakatla from the state's CARES Act community grants.
We have not yet arrived at that point, but the plans are in the making.
Metlakatla is one of 63 Alaska communities that haven't accepted their grants, more than a quarter of the 228 communities the state planned to give the money to. Metlakatla already received a federal grant from another category of CARES Act funding for tribal governments. And fishing businesses in the community are going to receive money from yet another batch of CARES Act funds. But when it comes to the community grants,
has it been a challenge to determine what is eligible for these expenses?
Oh, yes. Definitely.
All Alaska communities had to do to receive the first round of state funding was to sign a grant agreement and pass a resolution accepting the grants. Sandra Muller oversees the grant program as the director of the State Division of Community and Regional Affairs. She says the state has encouraged communities to take those steps to claim their funds and answered questions from local leaders as they've come up.
We've reached out at least 3 times to each community.
She says communities have different reasons for not accepting the grants. Some haven't had COVID-19-related expenses that would be eligible to be covered by the funding.
Obviously, every community has expenses, and these are really trying times. However, once they looked at the documents and saw the eligible requirements from the federal treasury, they chose not to apply.
Another reason is some of the communities are very small, and they don't have staff to handle the grant process. Others, like Metlakatla, are tribal governments that have received other federal CARES Act payments, and some of them have had their COVID-19 costs covered by those payments. To make things even more confusing, the federal government has repeatedly updated its guidance to states and communities about what expenses are eligible for the grants. And Congress could further expand what expenses are eligible if it can agree on another relief bill. This has left communities with a lot of uncertainty. Nils Andreasen, the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League, has been helping local leaders with the grants. He says the federal government has increased the amount of information communities must provide to receive the money.
So there's a process involved, and every even just little step for a small community is a challenge. And like that's what we're doing right now is for all of those that are on the list who haven't requested those funds. We're walking through with each and every one of them. Here's how to do this. Here's what to do. How can we help?
Andreasen says most municipalities are devoting their grants to relief payments to local businesses and other organizations. Federal guidelines prevent communities from using the grants to make up for lost revenue.
I think we'll come to the end of this process with communities that are still in dire straits based on lost revenue. And for as much as CARES Act funds will have helped them through this period, there's going to be significant challenges ahead of us.
Any money that communities don't spend by December 30th must be returned to the federal government. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
In other news, bears looking for an easy meal continue to be a problem around Petersburg. Borough Assembly members like Jeff Mucci put out the call Monday for the community to do a better job of securing trash cans.
You know, we can do a few things to kind of, you know, minimize the amount of garbage cans that are getting knocked over and drugged down the street and thrown all over your neighbor's yard. So, you know, if we can secure the lids, that's great. If you can keep your garbage can inside until your day of pickup, that's great. And, you know, I guess there's some options out there to secure your garbage can lid a little bit more securely.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has captured and relocated three bears to the south end of Mitkoff Island this year. It's a problem that resurfaces every few years as bears seek calories before hibernation. A poor berry year or fewer salmon in area streams can make it worse. Biologists say chickens are also a target, along with garbage cans. Another assembly member, Jay Stanton Greger, said even a bungee cord across the lid did not stop a bear from his trash.
You know, a motivated bear is a pretty tough creature to stop. You know, we've gone to our pretty much most of our neighborhood has gone to keeping ours in our garages. Not ideal. Nobody likes the smell of garbage in the garage, but it's worked. You know, we haven't had garbage strewn across our neighborhood since most of us have taken those steps. So I would strongly encourage members of the public to properly secure it, whether it be with ratchet straps in the garage, you know, like lock it down, and then they will go away. You know, if there's no food, they move on.
Nuisance black bears are reported throughout the community this year. Assemblymember Taylor Norheim also cautioned against letting children play in wooded areas where bears might be. Elsewhere in the state, a hunter was killed by a grizzly bear in the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park southeast of Fairbanks. According to a press release from the park, the hunter was on a 10-day moose hunt with a friend near the Chisana River drainage where he was mauled on Sunday. It's the first time a bear mauling has been recorded in the park since it was established in 1980, according to the release. Park officials did not identify the hunter. It's the second fatal mauling in Alaska in recent months. In July, a Hope resident was killed by a bear while clearing a trail about a mile from his cabin. Prior to the July incident in Hope, there had been no fatal bear maulings in the state since 2018. A public hearing on a November ballot measure that could radically change the way Alaskans pick their elected leaders was held Monday, with only one person calling in. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
If passed, Measure 2's changes would be threefold. First, it would replace separate party primary ballots with one that's open to all candidates. Spokesman for Alaska's Better Elections Initiative, Scott Kendall, says that would end some of the most competitive races being decided by a limited group of partisan voters.
So every candidate gets on the same ballot regardless of party, and every voter receives the same ballot regardless of party. You simply vote for your favorite in every race, and the top four vote-getters, regardless of their party, would advance to the general election.
Then in November, voters would rank their choices in order of preference, and if nobody wins more than 50% of first-choice votes, the candidate with the least number of votes is eliminated, and voters who chose that candidate first have their second choice counted, and that process continues until one candidate receives majority support. Kendall, who served as independent former Governor Bill Walker's chief of staff, says the third part of the initiative would increase disclosure requirements for hard-to-trace dark money supporting political candidates.
That's money that goes into our election system, and because of the way it's transferred through several nonprofit groups, the voting public has no way of knowing where the money actually came from.
The Yes Camp is well-funded, with more than $1 million coming from a centrist political group funded by Catherine Murdoch, a daughter-in-law of media mogul Rupert Murdoch. In Alaska, several prominent politicians have lined up to oppose the measure because they say it would reduce political parties' influence.
Former Governor Sean Parnell and former Senator Mark Begich have called ranked choice voting political trickery.
That's Brett Huber, a former campaign manager for Governor Mike Dunleavy. He's a spokesman for Defend Alaska Elections, which opposes the measure. Its largest donors include state and national Republican Party groups, as well as conservative organizations like the Club for Growth and the Koch brothers-funded group Americans for Prosperity. Huber argues that the current party primary system works, with ranked choice relatively unproven.
The net effect of this system is to take something that's known, understood, transparent, and fair in Alaskans' mind and turn it into an experiment that's failed in other areas and let us deal with the aftermath.
Under the current system, voters registered nonpartisan or undeclared can request any party's ballot. That was an issue raised by cartoonist Pat Race, the only member of the public to testify in the hearing. Race says his House district in Juneau often has competitive Democratic primaries, whereas statewide races for governor or Congress have competitive contests between Republicans. And as a nonpartisan, he can't vote in both primaries at once.
It puts me in the position of having to choose, choose which ballot I want to vote on and which races I want to influence, which is really hard because a lot of these races are decided in the primary elections.
Measure 2 will appear on the November 3rd ballot. That's following an unsuccessful challenge by Alaska's former attorney general that was dismissed by the Alaska Supreme Court. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Researchers from the University of Alaska Fairbanks began looking at a big change to one of the state's biggest glaciers Monday. As Claire Strempel reports from Alaska's Energy Desk, it's melting so rapidly it could create a new bay north of Yakutat.
What's happening at the Malaspina Glacier may be the largest landscape transformation underway in the United States.
So you're looking at something becoming a big ocean bay, essentially, that's the site of a small state.
Martin Trufer says he doesn't like to pick on Rhode Island, but the Malaspina is bigger. He's a glaciologist with the Geophysical Institute and a physics professor at UAF. He's studied big ice from Greenland to Antarctica.
The Malaspina is kind of a hard glacier not to pay attention to if you're a glaciologist. It's a really big glacier.
Malaspina Glacier sits in Wrangell-St. Elias National Park and flows onto lowland plains on the north side of Yakutat Bay. As it retreats, it's opening up lakes that connect to the ocean. The National Science Foundation recently awarded Trufer's team $1.3 million to study the Malaspina's retreat.
The goal of the project is really to suss out a bit more how likely that is and what rates are we talking about, you know, where are we going to be in 50 years, where are we going to be in 100 years.
His team will measure how fast the glacier moves and how fast it's melting in different places. They'll pay special attention to the front of the glacier, where the ice is turning into those lakes. They plan to find out whether the Malaspina will disappear completely based on different climate models. Trufer says meltwater from this one glacier makes Alaska a big contributor to global sea level rise.
And some of these changes that we're seeing are really actually hard to kind of wrap your head around of what's actually going on. And this is really one of those places.
Trufer says it's too soon to tell what the impacts on Yakutat hunters and fishers may be, but he plans to make community connections and find out. This isn't the first time a big glacier has melted in Alaska. Yakutat Bay used to be full of ice from the Hubbard Glacier about 1,000 years ago. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Claire Strempel.
Rainforest Run, half marathon and 10-kilometer run and walk had a mix of in-person and virtual participants this month in Petersburg. The in-person event started and ended at Sandy Beach Park Saturday morning with a 13.1-mile and 10-kilometer distances. 27 people signed up to run or walk that day on the road to Frederick Point and the Cabin Creek Reservoir. Another 5 people ran or walked the distance on their own and sent in their times. 3 ran the 13.1 half marathon that day, with Kirby Green taking first overall in just under 1 hour and 54 minutes. Virtual participant Beth Lesh was the top female runner for the half with a time of 2 hours, 22 minutes, and 33 seconds. Marquetta Eath finished first in the 10K in just under 53 minutes. Alice Williams was the fastest to walk that distance in 1 hour and 35 minutes. And one person, Matt Powick, rode the rugged half-marathon course on his unicycle, finishing in 2 hours, 24 minutes, and 36 seconds. The event was put on by the Petersburg Medical Center this year, and it raised $227 for the Petersburg High School cross country team. 11 high school runners also completed time trials on parts of the course that morning. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. This is our weekly weather check-in with the National Weather Service in Juneau. I'm joined virtually today again by Kimberly Vaughn, who's the observation program leader with the National Weather Service. I hope I'm still getting that right. Hi, Kimberly.
Yes, good morning. And it's you can just say Opal.
Okay.
That's what they like to call it, shorten that too, so if that is easier.
Okay, well, sounds good. Let's start off with what we've seen the last week weather-wise in this area.
Yeah, well, it's been kind of a wet pattern that's been going on. We had a low out in the Gulf that moved up, and it did actually move a little bit closer in with the front, which brought in a little bit stronger winds into the inside channels overnight last night, so you might have seen a little bit of wind. It didn't make it too far in from the northern half of the panhandle, so you guys were kind of right at the cusp there of whether you were getting any localized enhanced winds or not.
Okay, and then is this expected to continue later on this week?
Well, you know, it's it is the fall pattern, so I wish I had a better news, but I guess the good news is the snow isn't flying yet.
Okay, yeah, so what does the forecast look like going into the weekend?
So let's see here. The weekend weather, unfortunately, starts out wet and ends up wet. So we're looking for showers to start out, and we'll have continued wet pattern through the entire weekend. So I think just grab the raincoat and get out there and just enjoy what we've got as far as pretty mild temperatures with highs in the mid-50s to low 50s. So not too bad.
Okay. Kimberly, I've heard some reporting about a forecast for this being another La Nina winter time. Can we talk a little bit about what exactly that means? What is a La Nina and what that looks like normally in Southeast Alaska?
Okay, well, I'm not sure I would ever use normally and La Nina together because there really isn't a normal for it. And I think the two words that I really want to make sure that we understand here is probabilistic, which is what a seasonal forecast is. It's what are the chances that we're going to have a certain condition, where our forecast that we put out every day is a deterministic forecast. This is what's going to happen. This is our forecast for it. So the probability for La Nina is typically, it favors a cooler than normal winter. But I think what's interesting and why I don't want to use the word normal is our warmest winter on record was actually during a La Nina year. So even though it favors colder than normal, we've actually had record warm winters during a La Nina year. The forecast or the probabilistic forecast for this winter as we go into it is pretty mild, and we're actually looking for during the first half, which would kind of be the October, November, December time frame, we're looking for pretty much equal chances, meaning there's nothing that's telling us the El Niño is not strong enough, doesn't have a strong enough signature to say it is going to probably have a higher probability of doing higher or lower in any value, whether it's in temperature or precipitation amounts. Now, once we get to the second half of the winter time, as far as a January, February, March, things do change a little bit, and there's actually a stronger signature, a slight tilt towards below normal temperatures finally starting to reach the panhandle of Alaska, and the precipitation amounts are about equal chances during that time. So what can most likely happen is when we do have the colder temperatures, that's usually meaning we have offshore flow, which is bringing dry, cold air in from Canada, which is not conducive for snowfall.
All right. So later on the season, more of a sign of that.
Correct. As far as the colder, what you would say normal La Nina behavior should have. It was also interesting, I mentioned that we hit a record warm winter during a La Nina year, and yet our record snowfall year, if anybody remembers that back in 2006-07 time frame, was actually during a La Nina winter. So it really, it's not something to, you know, take the forecast to the bank with. And so we'll just keep an eye on it. And yeah, it's just, like I said, it's the difference between a probabilistic forecast and a deterministic forecast.
Okay, sounds good. Anything else we missed for this week?
I don't think so.
All right, thanks for the time, Kimberly. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Thank you.
It's Kimberly Vaughn with the National Weather Service in Juneau. These check-ins are every Wednesday. You can also hear them archived on our website, kfsk.org. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki. Coming up on KFSK, Street Beat Music with Leo Luzak this afternoon, and the High Country at 2:30 with the Pelsman Girls. 4 o'clock, All Things Considered, with local news and updated weather at 4:30. Alaska News Nightly on at 6 tonight, followed at 6:30 by Ebb Tide Music with Chelsea Tremblay. At 9 o'clock, it's Acoustic Accents with Bud Johnson. 10 o'clock, World Cafe. And at 12 midnight, the BBC World Service broadcast live from London. And up next, weather and messages.
Support comes from Hammer and Wecon, with online grocery orders now available for click and collect pickup or delivery in Petersburg. Through the new website or the app, grocery shopping from home is available. To set up an account and shop locally online, the website is groceries.hammerwecon.com.
53 degrees outside the KFSK studios, and as you just heard, we're in kind of a holding pattern here for the next week or so. Widespread rain showers forecast today, highs in the mid-50s, winds out of the southeast to 10 miles an hour. Numerous rain showers tonight, lows around 50, and widespread rain showers Thursday and Thursday night. Rain showers Friday into Friday night, and then rain Saturday right through Tuesday, with temperatures holding steady, highs around 50 to the mid-50s, lows overnight in the mid-40s. Here's the marine forecast. A gale force low over the southeastern Gulf will track northwestward and weaken through today. A second weaker low enters the eastern Gulf from the south by tomorrow and moves north-northwest through tomorrow night. Inside water, Stevens Passage, north winds 20 knots today, becoming southeast this afternoon, seas 4 feet. And northeast winds tonight, 10 knots, seas 2 feet or less. Same thing tomorrow. And tomorrow night, winds out of the southeast, 10 knots, seas 2 feet or less. Southern Chatham Strait, north winds 20 knots today, becoming southerly this afternoon. 4-foot seas, except 9 feet near ocean entrances. Tonight, north winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet or less, except 7 feet near ocean entrances. By tomorrow, winds out of the southeast, 15 knots, seas 3 feet except 7 feet near ocean entrances. And tomorrow night, south winds, 10 knots, seas 2 feet or less except 7 feet near ocean entrances. Frederick Sound, northeast winds 20 knots today, becoming southeast, 15 knots in the afternoon, 4-foot seas dropping to 3 feet. And northeast winds by tonight, 10 knots, seas 2 feet or less. By tomorrow, southeast 10-knot winds, seas 2 feet or less, and tomorrow night, winds out of the southeast 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Sumner Strait Small Craft Advisory today, southeast 25-knot winds becoming east 15 knots in the afternoon, 5-foot seas dropping to 3 feet, near ocean entrances, seas at 8 feet. Tonight, east winds 15 knots and seas 3 feet, then down to 2 feet or less, except near ocean entrances, seas at 6 feet. More of the same tomorrow, east winds 15 knots, 3-foot seas, down to 2 feet or less, except near ocean entrances, seas 6 feet. And by tomorrow night, winds out of the southeast 15 knots, and seas 3 feet, except 6 feet near ocean entrances. Clarence Strait, small craft advisory this afternoon, southeast winds today increasing to 30 knots, then diminishing to 20 knots by this afternoon, seas at 6 feet, dropping to 4 feet, except 7 feet out near ocean entrances. by tonight into tomorrow, southeast 20 knot winds with 4 foot seas, and tomorrow night southeast 15 knot winds, seas 3 feet.
Support for KFSK comes from Alaska Fiber. With wood-burning stoves from Blaze King and wood pellet heat from Osborne, and special orders welcome,